So this week's parsha coming up is Tetzaveh. Okay? So we just did Truma. Mm-hmm. Truma was all about, it was two things. It was telling us about the vessels for the tabernacle, for the Mishkan. And then after that, it got into the Mishkan itself.
I disagree.
You disagree?
Yes.
That what?
Out of the gate.
That was what the parsha was about.
That was Truma.
I know. It's so much deeper than that.
Okay, it's fine. I'm not focusing on Truma today.
So much deeper than that.
Okay, we'll come back to it then. We'll come back to it. We have the Ark, we have the Menorah, we have the Shulchan.
But it's about the giving.
You like the Truma part. Okay, good. I like that. That's true. So then we get to Tetzaveh. Tetzaveh, first of all, the one parsha from the one time that Moshe is born until the end of the Torah, there's only one parsha that Moshe is not mentioned by name in this week's coming parsha, Tetzaveh. Okay? It says...
No parsha from...
From the time he's born.
From the time he's born. Okay.
Right. So from the time he's born throughout to the rest, he's always mentioned.
Until the end.
Until the end, except...
Every single parsha?
Every parsha, except for Tetzaveh.
I'm sure there's a reason.
So what's the reason? He was never sleeping, that's for sure. It's also this week's parasha we celebrate called Shabbos Zachar, right? It's, we have an obligation to remember what Amalek did. There's a biblical commandment that says that you must remember that which Amalek did to you when you were leaving the land, when you left Egypt. So every year we have an obligation to do a public reading, and this is this week. At the end of the Torah reading, we'll take out a separate Torah, and we'll read from that, about remembering what they had done to us. They came and they attacked us unprovoked. And we have to remember that, and also
Hashem saved us.
But also that we have an obligation. Actually, there are three obligations when the Jews come to the land of Israel. Three mitzvahs that, besides, there are other things, but the three directives are what? There is that you have to make a king, you have to build the Beis Hamikdash, the temple, and you have to wipe out Amalek. Those are the three. Now that doesn't mean that there aren't other things that are unique to the land of Israel that you have to do. For example, you give truma, meiser. There's a whole, when it comes to agricultural, like peah, and there's amazing. Like, there's a ton of beautiful mitzvot that are associated with the land of Israel. That's so that you always leave over. You're always taking care of the needy and those who need. So there are beautiful mitzvot like that. There's also something called meiser sheni, which is a very cool thing. Which is basically that. Right? Remember this? Mm-hmm. You take a 10% off and you bring it up to. You have to, the obligation is to bring it and eat it in Jerusalem. So like there are four out of the 7 year Shemitah cycle. Out of that, out of those, there's only 2 years that you take and give it to the ani, to the poor. Otherwise, you're taking a percentage of your crop and you're obligated to bring it up to Jerusalem. These are things that are that are associated with the land of Israel and different obligations that we have as we.
For the priests? Is that...
No, for a regular guy. For a regular guy, he's a farmer.
No, to bring it to
the Mice or Shani is for you. And most people would redeem it because who wants to schlep it? So you would actually monetize it, come up to Jerusalem, and cash it in there, and you'd eat whatever the value of that.
Wow.
Yeah. So the idea being that you want to be, it's the idea to come and
spend money
and to live in and be part of the of Jerusalem. And
it's like Israel bucks. Seriously, you're investing in Israel.
Yeah. Right. So that okay. So that would be remembering what Amalek did. Now, what's interesting is that it's something that you're supposed to, the obligation is to wipe out. And so the question is always, if you're trying to wipe them out, so why are we remembering? It's like, if anything, if I want to get rid of, I want to forget them. Like, why am I specifically remembering that part of the wiping them out is remembering? Okay. So we said Moshe is not mentioned in this parsha. We have remembering the Zachor, Esa Asher Asal Amalek, as you left Egypt, what Amalek did to you. And then what is the parsha about? So Tetzava is about the big day kahuna, the special garments that the Kohen would wear, both the regular Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. And then at the tail end of the parsha, it's the strangest thing, because we just said Truma, besides for the giving, which is important, is that we talked about the vessels. The weird thing is that it mentioned all of the vessels except for one. The altar, the golden altar, which was where they brought the Ketores, the incense offering, the Mizbeach HaZav. It's only brought here at the end of Tetzaveh. It's like, wait a second, everybody asked the question, what's going on? Okay, so that's a very famous question. So if you're looking at the parasha, though, what's interesting about the parasha is that so Moshe is not represented here. And who is? It's really about Aaron. It's about Moses' brother, Aaron. He becomes the focus about making him the Kohen. Okay? So now, before we try to answer it, I just want to, I love these Gemaras. I love the Gemara in Chulin. It's on Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, 139b. Okay? And it's talking, the context of the Gemara is talking about the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. So there is a mitzvah that says, if you're walking along and you see a bird's nest and there are chicks there, and you have a mitzvah to chase away the mother and take the chicks. And that if you do that, you'll be promised a long life.
What?
This is the mitzvah.
Yeah.
Now again, there are people actually I know today who want to have I want to push the blessing of the Arichas Yamim, the long life, so they'll set it up so that they'll come across, there's a nest with them, and they'll chase away the mother, and the way it's written is that it happens. It's something that happens. You happen to be walking along, you see this thing, you chase away the mother bird, and you take the chicks or the eggs. Okay? The Gemara is talking within the context and asks the first question. The Gemara asks, if you have a guy who has a bird's nest on his head, would the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan apply?
Okay.
This is
a ridiculous question.
Right? So obviously, it's an interesting question, right?
But it's his nest.
No, so the question is, what does it mean? So it is basically asking, the Maharal says on this, he says that this, what it's saying is basically, what's the nature of a man? Is he more of the earth, or is he more of the spiritual? So it's on his head.
They couldn't say it a different way.
It's much more fun this way.
Oh, it is. It definitely is.
Frustrating.
Okay. Because we want to frustrate
him. He's dumb.
Oh, good. Right. One of the classes recently, we talked about the idea of the trees and the fruits and how it's connected. We see in the creation story, man's created, the spiritual being of man, that God blew into man a living soul. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden he puts him in the garden,
right,
and he creates the trees and the fruits.
Right.
Which is a very, and so we learned the teaching there was from.
Physical.
Right, we see this idea that in a way, God creates, just like we see with a mother, that she's creating a child, right? She's about to give birth, and she starts to lactate because the same source of life is going to be the one that sustains life. Mm. It's a very cool idea that same thing that the Torah is saying there, in that case, is I'm going to create you from the ground, and that it's the ground that's going to sustain you. The source of your birth is going to be the place that also sustains. It's a cool idea. That's parenthetically. Okay, fine. And then the Chaban talks about that's all, related to the land of Israel. That's where it was all happening at the beginning of creation. Okay, fine. But here, the Adama, man is from the earth, and that now the question is he more earth or more spiritual? Okay, fine.
Well, Michelle always tells me.
You're more spiritual or you're more physical?
Man is
much more physical?
Is physical, earth, dirt,
Okay.
And that's why we have to do certain mitzvot.
But are women more connected to the ground?
Women are more spiritual. I think it's that ladder.
The women are
already really.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll leave that for another time.
Maybe that's justification.
We'll leave it. I know.
And the gender rules and rules.
Whatever. It's fine. But then the Gemara goes on and says Moshe min HaTorah minayin. It says, where's Moses in the Torah? What do you mean, where's Moshe in the Torah? So he says Bishagam hu basar. So from the answer, it's actually a verse in Bereshis, right? It's actually around the time of the story with the flood, with Noah. And so it says, so it says there, for he is, for that he is also flesh, therefore shall his days be 120 years. And that, so what are you talking about? Where do you have Moses in the Torah? Moses is all over the Torah. But the idea of the Gemara saying is that where do you see an early hint for Moses?
Oh.
And that it's going back to the flood. And that the fact that he's flesh, and there's this idea that Bishagam is the same Gematria, is the same numerical value as the name Moshe. And so there's an early hint to Moshe, and there's a very deep understanding to that. Okay, fine. And then it asks, where do you find Esther in the Torah? Where do you find a reference to Mordechai? And where do you find a reference to Haman? Okay? So it goes, first, I'm sorry, took it out of order. First it says, where do you find Haman in the Torah? Hamin ha'etz, from the tree that I told you not to eat from, Haman,
right.
Hamin, okay? And then Esther, it says, Vanochi haster astir, Mordechai min ha'Torah minayin. Also, where do you find Mordechai? More drawer. Okay, so now the idea of the Gemara is that where do you see an early references or hidden references to these people? Because obviously Mordechai, Esther, and Haman are not in the Torah.
Even Moshe, right.
Right, so, but Moshe,
right.
Right. So, but what's interesting, the takeaway from this Gemara, at least what I want to look at today, is the fact that Moshe is thrown into the story. You have Haman, Esther, Mordechai. What's Mordechai? What's Moshe doing here, right? It's a very strange thing. You have Moshe does not belong in
which part? But you said this week
Right. So this is two separate things. I'm laying out the evidence, right?
Oh,
so So this is the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin is laying out and asking, where do I find early hints to certain personalities? What's interesting about this Gemara is that it has the Purim story for us.
Mm-hmm.
It has Haman, Mordechai, Esther, Mordechai.
Okay.
But then throws in Moshe. What's Moshe doing
right,
there?
Right.
Moshe doesn't belong in this story.
Who's the part where it's referencing Moshe?
Yeah.
It starts out, the first thing it asks, Moshe min ha'Torah minayin, b'shagam hu basar. So, but...
In
English. Then that he is also of flesh. But it's referencing a pasuk from the time of the flood.
But why does it even need to... Like, where's Moses in the Torah?
Good. Right. So then what the Gemara is really saying here is... There's clearly when the Gemara is doing this here, is it saying that these personalities these souls are coming from the beginning of creation or the beginning of time, in a way. That's how I would say it, to simplify it for us. So that you have references to these people in an earlier stage of way before they ever show up on the scene. That's basically.
So the only reference to Moshe is the 120.
Bishagam hu basar. It's the 120. No, I'm sorry. It's Moshe. Moshe and Bishagam are the same numerical value.
And 120 is how old Moshe was.
There's more. Like Moshe is taken from the water. It's just coming from the time of the flood. There's but for today's purposes, I'm asking the simple question. Or not so simple question, but what's Moshe doing in the Purim story as given to us by the Gemara in Chulin? It's strange, okay? So now you have Moshe. Why is Moshe actually removed from this week's parsha, coming parsha? Okay, so the Gemara, so it tells us that because Moshe said at the after the sin of the golden calf, so God says, Moshe, had enough of these Jewish people. Let's just start over. We'll press the refresh button, and we are going to be. We'll do it with you. And Moshe says no, and he prays on our behalf. And one of the arguments he says is that you can't compare a three-legged chair to a one-legged chair, meaning that to build a nation, you can't compare it to being built on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and thus on me. Right? And the more that you learn about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it's a very good argument. I mean, you see that constantly Hashem is saying, I remember Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what they did, because they really, when we daven, right, we say, okay, Avram, okay, Yitzchak, right, because what are we saying? We said they created pathways.
Mm-hmm.
They opened up Like they, these things did not exist.
They were prototypes of characteristics.
But even more than that, they
conduits.
They created connections to God that we take for granted. We're like standing on their shoulders. Mm. It's like we show up. Yeah, what's the big deal? It's like no, this didn't exist. They like opened up. They literally furrowed and opened up a conduit to God that didn't exist prior.
So something you just said reminded me, and I don't know if this is the answer. Moses isn't mentioned because it's all about the Kohen,
okay.
Kohen Gadol,
yeah.
And that's all about Aaron.
Okay.
And Moses was so humble, and I don't know, that this is all about focusing on Aaron and the priesthood, and he didn't want to, you know, like, to, like, dilute the emphasis or the, you know, the focus of attention is on Aaron and the priesthood, as opposed to...
Well, there's no question you're saying well, as we say.
Okay.
But there's something missing, and that is just basic stuff, which is that when it came to that argument with God, or this beseeching for us, he said to God, "Machani na misifrecha asher kasafta," wipe me out from the book that you wrote, from your book.
Mm. Okay? Moses says.
Moses says. Mm. Meaning, I feel so strongly about this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm willing to sacrifice myself for the Jewish people.
This isn't after the golden calf.
This is after the golden calf. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So he's making this argument. So
he's saying, "Save the Jewish people.
Take me out. I'm willing to say, I don't. As far as we're concerned, I'm willing to give up myself for the Jewish people.
Mm.
So therefore, wipe me out from the book. Now, there is so that's that idea, okay? But the question really is, we have to go back a step, and that is, why is Moshe, let's say it this way, why is Aaron the high priest? Why did he become the Kohen?
Why not Moshe?
Yeah.
Because, when they were dealing with Pharaoh, I mean, Aaron was like the spokesperson. Aaron was the spiritual one.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
No, because Aaron needed some kind of... I mean, Aaron was a big part of the story. It's not like Moses did everything himself. So this was what was bestowed upon Aaron as his...
Okay.
His... there's two things. First, bestowed upon Aaron for his participation in this, but I think also... I think the Jewish people needed more than just one guy, right? I think that it needed that. This isn't a monarchy, right? This is, I think they needed more than just one guy.
Okay.
You know, that's so let's, my opinion.
Okay, so I'll tell you like this.
There must be something else.
It's got to be more to it.
No, but, that sounds good.
Okay, but here's
a good idea.
Everything I'm telling you, it's just, we'll call it like simple push up shot. But if you ask most people, they wouldn't know the answer either. But if you just take out the Chumash and you read the Chumash, you're like, oh, okay.
It makes sense.
No, it's not that it makes sense. It's there.
Okay.
It's more than that. It's like, meaning we just, there's so many of these things that if you just like read carefully and you took your time, like we all, I'm not talking about, it's all of us, that when you, and I'm only telling you this because like I had good teachers that showed me how to like look at this and they pointed this stuff out. So, oh, there it is. So then when you see like, oh, okay. Meaning, so there's a reason for everything being laid out the way it was. So we already assume, like you're saying, it's not good to have one guy, let's share the thing, or have a spokesman.
And he was humble, and he said, I have a speech impediment, you know, let my brother be
the spokesman. Okay, good. So now that goes back to the burning bush.
Right.
It says that actually that conversation took 7 days, and that Moshe was arguing with God. And I heard this beautiful idea, just the way it was said, is that Moshe, that argument that he had with God is like, it represents all of us. Because we are constantly arguing with God and reality and saying, but shouldn't it be this way?
Right.
I mean, like, really, if we took a step back, we're like, no, but reality is like this. It's just we don't want to really, like, we really want to fight. But no, it really could be. No, it really is not. But, like, we want to insist. And eventually we come around. So now, in the case of Moshe, with this discussion with God, there's in the back and forth, God doesn't get angry with Moshe until one point. And that is, one time he says, it actually tells us that Hashem got upset.
Yeah.
in this case, meaning at the case of the burning bush.
Call them out.
And he said, because what he says there is Moshe says, but what about my brother? And he's worried about his brother. And now what's interesting is that we have models for brotherhood early on.
And they're not so good.
Right.
Yeah. Jacob and Esau.
No, earlier.
And
Cain and Abel.
And rarely do they think about it in a good way. They don't like look out for their brothers.
It's even worse.
It's terrible. He's stealing each other's...
They kill right in heaven. But the earliest model is Cain and Abel. And in Hebrew, Cain, the word for jealousy, kinna, and Cain, that name, is that almost like he said, I can't, Cain's like, I can't share this with anybody. There's no room for others. And so that was kind of a model for brotherhood that doesn't work. And then comes Moshe and Aaron, and we say, Shevet Achim Gam Yachad, that having brothers like coexist and it should be good, is the brothers, it's Aaron and Moshe. But now Moshe says to God at the burning bush, he says, what about my brother? He's been the leader. You know, Moses actually was absent from Egypt for 40 years.
Right,
he checks out.
Right.
40 years he's sitting in Midian, you know, working with Yitro, Jethro, and all that, and married, and whatever's going on over there. And Aaron's really the leader. So he says, like, what about my brother? And Hashem says to that answer, he gets angry. We said anytime that we say a reference of God getting angry, it's not that he's angry, God doesn't have anger, but rather that means that something's going to happen because of it. And what happens is that at that point, God's taking away from Moshe who he should have been, the Kohen, and he gives it to Aaron. And he says to him, he says, you know what? Not only you're worried about him being jealous of you, he's going to see you coming, and he's going to be happy. V'samach belibo. Mm-hmm. On that, Chazal say, the rabbis teach, that because of that, he doesn't wear a breastplate on his heart. And that's going to have the representation of the Jewish people, the 12 tribes, on his heart, because his heart was filled with happiness and joy seeing someone else's success.
Who's going to
have Aaron.
Aaron.
So Moses pleads for his brother, and Hashem...
Not pleads for him. No.
Advocate.
No, but God got upset. Like, there was something like... Meaning, you're giving that up.
You were going to...
Because you misunderstood, in a way. You didn't understand who... Like, you're worried that he's going to be jealous of you? It's
right?
The opposite.
Oh.
That's kind of what happened there. Here you're worried about him.
But isn't that a good quality?
That he's concerned about it?
That he's concerned about his brother.
But on the flip side is,
but
you're
thinking less of your brother, because he already had that. Like Aaron already had a quality that he was already thinking well of Moses.
He misunderstood how his brother would react. It was like here's a flash.
Right.
Your brother's not going to be jealous. He's actually going to
be happy.
Right.
But you're concerned about
which is nice.
And
but
you're advocating for.
No. So it's, on one hand, it sounds like that. But
right.
On the flip side is you're underestimating your brother.
Yeah, but isn't so? That's what Lawrence was saying. So the character traits of Aaron were rewarded by
100%.
This important position, which was a different position, it's like the separation of powers. You know,
it plays out that way, but you see that.
But it was to Moshe's detriment.
Yes, that's A. B also is that you see is you're looking at the end of the story. It's important to see the development of how we got there. Mm.
It's almost like the perfect team leader. Like you want to make someone else.
No, it ends up you want to make others better. So it's interesting.
It's
is
not
that,
about, that's what made him humble.
But making
you the all star on the team.
Correct. But if I'm going to stop
the
and
only
say,
all-star.
But if I'm going to look at this and say, okay, if we're going to get to like the reason the development of this idea is important is because the outgrowth of it is that we're going to see that. First, there's something maybe missing in Moshe. There's a little point here. There's something that's a little bit off. Meaning, none of it. This is Moses.
Greatest you as ever. The bolt of lightning comes in.
It's like understand, like meaning that there's something that he was faulted for, which ended up giving us something very positive. We see this, but so therefore the outgrowth of this, what we take away, is that there's something about Aaron and what the priesthood's supposed to be that it was taken from Moshe because he didn't have that. Because if Moshe had this, if he had this attribute, he would have looked and said, "My brother for sure would be happy." But he,
my brother would be happy with me, correct, Moshe, right? Being the Kohen Gadol.
Correct, but he didn't have it, but Aaron had that. So the takeaway is,
I don't see that as a flaw.
No, no, it's not a flaw. Yeah. But again, it means
Moshe had a
wait. When you say flaw, okay, it's very important to me to say that there's something lacking in Moshe. I'm not one to say that, but there is this. There's something deep down that there might be a little bit of something that's missing there, that Aaron ends up being the one who represents that idea, this incredibly lofty idea of that he can look at somebody and he celebrates that person.
The joy of someone else's success.
Success, and that, 100%. And what else? Is that the person's individuality is something that I can see and celebrate. Right, it's like meaning I see and I look around the table. Each person is an individual that has their individual uniqueness that makes them special. And then when they live up to their potential, I'm so happy. Yeah. So it actually, there's a medrash I think that says that Aaron had the ability to sit with somebody who was depressed, mm-hmm. spend a couple of minutes with them, and walk away. They were happy as any because he was able to show them their uniqueness. They could walk away knowing, oh, I'm special.
But let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So Aaron, okay, has become this regal, you know.
Big kahuna.
The big kahuna.
Literally.
So is part of that process, is he looked at differently by all the other Jews that you've been referring to? Like he would sit with someone one-on-one. Had he not been appointed that big kahuna, would it have been different? The perception that everyone has to Aaron.
Okay, so
if he didn't have.
So
that,
I'll just say it like this. They're interesting.
It's
visual there. So I'll say it like this. The way I'll answer it is that when you look at like the out, like net at the end of their days. So it says that when Moshe died, only a certain, like most people cried for him, but not everybody. When Aaron died, everybody cried for him. Hmm. So he clearly had a much stronger impact in that respect. He connected with the people much more than Moshe was more removed in a way because of who he was. Like you said, he was like he had reached a lofty.
So you're saying his flaw was that he did not recognize that Aaron would be happy for him.
Yeah, in a funny way, right? It's like a funny. It's like backwards,
he didn't see good enough in Aaron to know that he would be happy for him.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't say good enough, but the character trait.
He missed it. It was something that he missed, even though it's such a. We're talking about like.
A very subtle.
Extremely subtle. Just to show like how. It says that when it comes to the higher level person.
Yeah.
The greater in terms of how critical we are with them. And not in a negative way, but because this person is so. Is playing on such a high level, it's like a professional athlete, right? We're so hypercritical. Like, you could, in a million years, you couldn't even dream of doing half the stuff that guy's doing on the field, right? Yeah. But, if he missed it, like, man.
These guys are getting paid.
So you're looking at that. No, but you're saying, but like, when you're on that level. No, but right. So when you're on that level, you're like, you know.
So Moses, right. He's talked the rock, struck the rock.
Right.
So I have a couple of questions.
Okay, sure.
So this happens. When this happens, or when Moshe is talking to Hashem, does he know at that moment that that's what he's lost?
So
that honor or that bestowment from Hashem was taken from him and given to his brother. So that's my first question. Does Moshe know this at that moment?
Well, are you talking about at the burning bush?
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he says, "What about my brother?" So mm-hmm. it says Hashem got angry, but he says it. Really, that translates to Hashem's going to do something or something's coming.
I'm not sure he cared because he was so humble and
so that's,
he didn't want any of it.
That's where I'm going. So does he know that happened?
The shepherd.
And do
does
we know,
he care?
And do we know if he really cared?
Right.
In the end. Or is he happy Aaron came and was happy for Moshe, right?
Right.
Did Moshe come and was he happy for Aaron?
So...
I know there's a lot of questions.
So the pasuk reads like this. It's in Exodus 4:14, right? So it says that Hashem became angry with Moses and said, "There is your brother Aaron, the Levite. He, I know, speaks readily. Even now, he is setting out to meet you, and he will be happy to see you. V'samach belibo. I hate this English translation. It's like it just misses. Like the Chabad.org is much better on this. On when it comes to this translation, but it, so I'll do it. Hidaber yidaberhu. He will be the speaker. But Aaron achicha halevi. To make a point, he was, but he will not be. He'll be the Kohen. So, yeah. So Moshe,
Do we know if that bothered him or if it made him happy?
I don't think you're not getting anything right now. Do I think that bothered Moshe?
Probably not.
I mean, Moses didn't want Then he said, "Why don't you just give this to my brother?"
Right. Because the way it's written or the way it was presented, Hashem getting angry, it almost sounds like. It was supposed to be a punishment, and Moses like didn't take it as a punishment.
Well, it's not again. It's not punishment. It's again, like we look at these things as you know, but it's more of a. The bigger punishment was when Moshe came back initially after going to Pharaoh and Pharaoh rejecting him and making things worse. He comes back to Hashem, and he says, you know, now things are not only neutral; they're worse. And God says, "Ataya ata tira now with the ayin," which means now you'll see. And so they say on that, at that point, he had lost his ability to go into the land of Israel. You're only going to see
that
now.
That is a punishment.
Okay. Right, so that's a punishment. That's something that what kills Moshe is not being able to go into the land of Israel. Like, he understands. Someone who actually appreciates, like, what's going on in the land.
He put up with these people for
4 years. Right.
Schlepped them through the desert and listened to the argument.
And you can't go.
Yeah. So one thing, so what a good thing, I never thought of before.
Does anyone want any more?
So because...
I'm good, thank you.
So Aaron was the leader for 40 years, right?
With Moshe, yeah.
Right? So how much did Aaron help transition Moshe becoming...
Oh, you're saying before? Oh, you're saying before this,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, how much was Aaron involved in transitioning Moshe?
He was there. He was his partner.
Right, but I mean, like, they didn't really know Moses so much.
I think they knew.
Okay, but they knew Aaron.
I think that the idea is that the way they're presented, they're clearly coming from a very special place to begin with. They're coming from a family. You know, the thing about it, there are three siblings and they're all like superstars. You know,
Jonathan, this may sound like such a weird question, right? Moses and Aaron are brothers, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, how is Hashem appointing Aaron to be a Kohen Gadol? Does that mean Moses is no longer? If they're brothers, they're by default.
They're both
Kohens.
No. So that's what's interesting. Because it didn't exist. It didn't exist. And so Aaron becomes the first Kohen.
Right.
And so much so that
Pinchas. Well, like all the more reason, if Hashem is appointing him Kohen, by default, Moses should be.
No.
Because it wasn't.
It's going to
come down. You're thinking of it in familial terms, right, which is what we have down. Now.
Right. That's why the person who ends up having to be given is Pinchas, who's not his direct descendant. Meaning it's his sons. Him and his sons. His grandson already had to, like, Pinchas had to become, like, a Kunas Olam separately because he had not been born into it. He had already been born. Okay. Right. So it's like a whole...
So our own becoming a Kohen is actually what starts that line.
Correct. We actually...
Before then, there was no Kohen. There was a Levi.
Here, later. This is cool how this stuff goes. Yesterday, I'm in Yerushalayim for lunch. I was invited to a very interesting family. And there was a guest there. And she turns to me. I guess maybe it came up that I'm a Kohen. And so she says, oh, you know, there's this, they did research that there's a chromosome that's unique to, that's passed down through the father. And like they say, 80% of Kohanim have that marker.
Wow.
And so.
Going back to Aaron's.
Yeah. It's exactly what.
It's called the Aaron.
Right.
So our host, who's a retired professor, really? Yeah. he says, you know, you could have someone who has that gene that's not Jewish. And she says, what are you talking about? He says, it's very easy. He's a father's Kohen, and he marries a non-Jewish woman. They have a kid. So he was laughing. He goes, you see, doesn't mean he's a Kohen, because he's not a Kohen.
Right.
He's not even Jewish. It was very fine.
So get back to this.
Yes.
It just means he's a descendant of Aaron.
Right.
So what does it have to do with then Moshe not being mentioned?
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm sitting here going,
the suspense is
I was like going to write it. No, like,
please. We totally screwed up his whole.
It's all, no, that's why. That's why I have
him. That's why
he
paid me.
He brought me back.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
So this is good. Okay, so let's think about this for a second. So what we have right now is we're asking this question about the fact that it's this week's parsha, the Tzavet, this week's coming parsha, where Moshe is absent, and his absence is in the face of you could have taken him out of any parsha. So God said, okay, we'll figure out, Moshe, which one do you not want to be in?
One episode right. He's not in, right. In the episode. Show.
And you know what it's going to be? The one that we're talking about, the kahuna, about priesthood, right? That's the one we're going to take you out of. So is it a coincidence? No, it's Dafka. Why? Because now we've just discussed the whole derivative. You all right?
No, I'm just stretching
okay.
my back.
Okay. Do you want to switch?
No.
Okay.
Why this one?
Oh, good. So now it's Dafka. Because what we're saying is, what we're going to say now is that the way we've developed, we actually appreciate the idea that Moshe was supposed to be the high priest. And because of his issue with not appreciating
his brother personality traits,
right? And that, right? So therefore, it's his brother that has this trait of appreciating every individual.
Hmm. Yeah,
he's not mentioned in this.
In this, where it talks about the being the high priest.
Wait, so the parsha is about that being who's going to be the high priest?
It's about the vestments.
Okay,
it's all really like if you were to stop and read through the parsha. And say, okay, what do you see there? It's pretty much talking about the priesthood, about their what they're going to wear. It's all about that. So it's
right,
like,
but
all,
you could put Aaron, brother of Moshe, and he's in there,
right? But we take him out right, completely so because completely it's up. Almost like it's like it's highlighting the fact
that he's not in there.
We're going to take out now. Now take a step back.
I just find it's
wait. Here it gets better because listen to this. Okay. The fact that he's not here is because he was willing to say to God, I'd rather be wiped out your sefer, from your book.
So Hashem said,
so to save the Jewish people,
right?
And so it's actually not a negative, it's an amazing praise of his, but we're going to do it in the time of where it's the reminding us that he
about the Kohen what the Kohen wears.
Yeah, but going back to because how did we get here? We got here because Moses at that time
up.
At the thing gave it up because she didn't because he underestimated his brother's abilities.
Wait, you said there were two parshas where Moshe wasn't.
Just one. Wait a second. The golden calf hasn't happened yet.
Oh, great question. I was like waiting. I thought earlier you were going to come up with it, and you didn't. And I was like, and I'm going.
If Michelle was here, that would have happened.
No.
But why does it matter? Why do you care for the golden calf?
Because the whole point of him being out of this parsha.
So first of all,
is because he
So here's the answer. There's no chronological order.
And Hashem wants to kill off everyone.
That's not just a thing. It's like
there's no time moving. Put this all.
No. The Torah as it is coming from God. This is
all right.
The five. No. Well, listen to me. The five books. That's the beauty of it. The five books of Moshe are so carefully crafted, and it's Hashem giving it over to Moshe, and Moshe's scribe. Moshe is the scribe who's giving over. He's literally taking it in, and he puts it into paper, okay? So everything is exact.
It seems like an editorial
No, if anything, it accentuates our idea here. Because what we're saying is that this idea runs so deep that it's when I'm going to remove Moshe from the Torah, it's going to be specifically when it's related to the priesthood.
Okay, but on behalf of, because of something that hasn't even happened yet
in the
story.
No, because this has happened. Chronologically, it happened earlier.
Oh, okay,
You also don't know this is the only parsha that he's missing.
Until after
the whole book is.
Nah, okay. It just brings us back.
We study the whole.
No, so the point.
So
no, but the point.
It,
no, no, no.
How do you pick up on that?
But the
where
point
is this commentary brought out. Meaning, like, where is this discussed? The idea that this one parsha that him being omitted, that Moshe not being mentioned, the cause and effect
happen this way? Meaning, like, what we're, the idea that you're bringing up today.
How do you pick up on that?
Meaning, like, if I read through it and I said, oh, Moses was not in it, I wouldn't go, it's because.
Oh, okay. So wait. So there are two separate things. Your first question. Your first question. No, no.
I respectfully disagree with you.
The first question is, how do I know the question of Moshe being removed? When he says that, remove me from the book, right? That's where it's already, okay, you're going to be in the book, but we're going to take you out at a certain point. And that, and because the way it's written here, the atatitzave, you Moshe should command. Why didn't you say, like everywhere else, Vayedaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Daber, right? Here all of a sudden it changes the way it normally speaks.
Right.
To highlight this idea that this is different.
Right.
Okay, so the rabbis tell us that this is what's going on. Okay. So it's a, you know, midrashic, and this is like the teachings that are coming through based on the fact that there's an abnormal reference here. And then we have this whole backstory of what we're talking about. Where is it coming? It's in the Gemaras. It's in the Kabbalistic writings. This point that we're going to, where I'm like really like, it's more Kabbalistic, or let's say it's more like Rabbeinu Bachya, where they're coming in. They're saying, it's going. It's not just a coincidence. There's something much deeper here that's going on. The fact that we're honing in the place that I'm not going to put Moshe's name is specifically in reference to the high priesthood, is because it's taking us back to that. So like I just gave you all the details that most people would have no clue what we're talking about.
Right. No, I mean, it's a really beautiful, interesting point, and it makes a lot of sense. I'm just saying it's not something you would land upon.
Correct. It's not
yourself,
like
yourself, if you didn't read it.
Right. You have to read it critically.
Right.
But what I will say though is, it, on a most basic level, when you read along and then you have this weird thing where God says, and you should be commanding. What do you mean, and you should be commanding? It never speaks that way.
Yeah.
That's where all of a sudden everybody starts getting excited, and that's where then all of the stuff that we... Exactly. It brings, meaning it's not like out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So that when you have like any of these types of like developments that I'm giving you, it's because I have a weird text. Like, what do you mean, atatitzave? It doesn't talk like that ever. Like, and then it's just over and over again. It's just like the whole parsha is like that. Mm. So that's what it's like, screams at us and says, something weird's here. Oh,
look,
this is what's happening here. God is specifically taking his name out of here. And when, oh, wait a second, we're talking about priesthood here. Mm. Oh, this goes back to when he said, started complaining about it. But then this is where it brings us to this point about, because again, we have to still answer one question. What does this have to do with Amalek and remembering, right? So like the idea of Zachira, we said that it's very strange. Like you have to remember Amalek, what they did. Yeah. If you want to destroy them, we want to blot out their name, right. But I'm remembering it in the process. Okay.
How are we blotting out
the Amalek reference in this? No, why is it? Why
it's because we're saying this week, this parsha, besides the parsha, it's going.
Besides the absence of Moses.
But then we end up, we add this week, it happens to be, we add in this week, we read about Amalek.
Oh, okay, fine.
Sorry. It's like they're really
a multi-dimensional parsha.
Yes.
Well, it's not in the parsha here. It's when we bring it down. We read it together.
But the parsha itself is set up by the rabbis. They decide, look, this is going to be the parsha for a week because
that's how it's displayed. Like, yeah, that's how it runs.
Somebody could have said, oh, well, let's put in one more line.
Right. So that's right. So I would say like that to that. The way that we end up reading like that type of the annual completion of the five books of Moses and how everything's set up and the fact that one parsha goes together with the other and all these different like now I'm reading into it in a sense. So two things. What's happening in Tetzaveh, the way it's broken up, that's just it within that we see that Moses is removed from this specific story where he shouldn't have been. So whether I look at it as just this, like the whole Torah portion of the week, or even if I just take it to this, we notice like a pattern in this reading that it's weird that Moshe has taken out. So even if you would not break it up in these parsha that we have today of an annual completion, you still would be pointed to this anomaly in the text.
So now go back.
Hold on one second. But on the flip side is that we see, like I would say, that I've seen, like, let's say, Lubavitcher Rebbe of blessed memory, but others even before him, they understood the Torah has to this point, if you believe that God is the one who's the author of the Torah, the five books, directly like dictated to Moshe, so it's the same way that God is endless. His book is endless. This and that means there's such complexity. Like you go to discoveries and they come up with these like wild patterns, you know? So we take it seriously because we're saying that God is the one who dictated this. I'm taking that every little nuance, I'm going to be all over it. Now, the truth is also Kabbalistically, Kabbalah has a whole idea of the structure of how the non-physical world is able to come into the physical. How does that work? A spiritual realm that enters into the physical realm and the integration of those things, that's Kabbalah. That's Kabbalah. But when you read the Zohar looks at the five books and critically reads and looks for anomalies and then teaches you what those anomalies represent. So that there's such depth to like every little like nuance and every letter is this way as opposed to that way and this and that. So like when you read Zohar and you read, which is a Kabbalistic text, it's very much, you know, looking and digging into that the nuance. But to bring back to another question is Zohar, right? So the question is, but when you see the rabbis when things intersect in time, because when you read Parsha Zohar is read the Shabbos before Purim. Okay? Right. So that when you have everything kind of, there are years when it's Parsha Zohar is with Vayikra, because it's a leap year. You have, you know, so it moves around, and then we'll be sitting there going, so what's the connection between Zohar and Vayikra? Okay, so like that, but we take that seriously because we're saying that if things are going to intersect in a certain way, I'm going to look to see what is being messaged there. Is there something deeper here? Here, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm just telling you, that Tetzave together with Zohar, the ideas of the high priesthood and what we're getting towards, and what Zohar is about, and Amalek and all that stuff, it very much works, the themes work very well together in terms of what Aaron represents and what Amalek, the issues that Amalek represents for us and things of that nature. So we're going to get to that now. Like let's bring it together. Yeah. Do you want to say something?
I was going to say, if you're just tying it to Purim, is there sort of an analogy where Moses is not mentioned in this parsha? God is never mentioned in Megillah.
Ooh, okay.
But he's still present, but it's not revealed.
Okay.
And same kind of thing with the
Well, but let's go. Let's talk.
I wish the it's
being recorded. It's all recorded.
Let's think for a second. They're in the Megillah story. Let's go to the Megillah. There is a point in the Megillah that there is someone that actually says something along the lines, similar, but not the same, where someone says, if it means that I am going to be lost, I'll be lost. It was Esther.
Really?
Yeah, Esther says, Kasher avadati avadati. So she's actually willing to go.
She's parroting Moshe.
In a weird way. She's willing to give up of her own.
Right, for the Jewish.
For the Jewish people. Right. Okay. Now,
well, that's the climactic moment of the story,
right? I mean, so here's okay. So now let's. I'm going to pan out a little bit and just show you like different themes, and then you'll be able to fill it in yourselves by when you as. But keep in mind, so it talks about the idea of Netzach. Netzach means to be eternal, Hod,
eternal,
like forever. And then there's this idea of Hod, which is beauty. Which I will use in this respect, I'll say is the idea of glory, which would be like a person's ability to be the most that they can be. So now, Mordechai says to Esther, this is like the craziest thing. He says to her, listen, Esther, the issue is not whether the Jewish people are going to be saved or not, right?
Well,
right? They're going to be, regardless of what you do,
yeah.
Right? Redemption comes. It's a question. That's not the issue. The issue is what are you going to do, right? And so here she's willing, like Moshe, to give up their identity for the greater people. But it's from that place that they actually earn their eternal aspect. It's called Megillat Esther, right? We're Megaleh, forever. We're gonna have Tanit Esther. We're celebrating. We're gonna fast for Esther. So here's the person, and Moshe's the same thing. And we have other examples in our history of where people. This is the craziest story. When it goes to the book of Ruth, it says that there was a guy there who was supposed to do the Yibum, supposed to marry Ruth, and he says, "I won't because my name will be." Like, it will damage my family name if I do this. He ends up becoming Plony Almoni, John Doe. We don't know his name. His name is lost forever. But rather, it's Boaz who steps up to the plate. We know his name. He's eternal, right? So it's like the willingness to sacrifice. But now, that's one thing. The flip side is what Aaron represents. What Aaron represents is the idea of the celebration of the individual. So, like, you have, in a weird way, Moshe, who is willing to give up his identity, but it's Aaron who celebrates every individual's identity. Okay? So, like, they play, like you said, in the end, it's like they go hand in hand, but there is some kind of, like, lack in Moshe that he doesn't recognize that in the other initially, and loses the priesthood because of that. But because of that play, you have this they play off each other. Aaron and Moshe are Netzach, eternal, and the celebration of the individual. Meaning, so how, and that's kind of what the Purim story is about. The Purim story is saying there's the continuance of the Jewish history that God promised that we're going to be playing out throughout the history of the world. We're going to go through a lot of Avram like fainted because when he was telling him at the beginning, this is not going to be an easy story. And he's like, he shows him like, and he like, he's out because it's like, whoa, it's like overwhelmingly not pleasant, but it's a long path that gets us to we're going towards something. But so where does the individual play in that? And so the Esther, the Purim story, and what happens really is that, to take it just another little idea, is that Moshe really is the person who represents the written Torah. But there's something that goes along. It's a parallel book that's called the oral tradition, which is the development of that. And so that Moshe, who is the written, the Jewish people accepted at Mount Sinai, they don't accept that extra part until mm-hmm. Purim. It's that when we start to see the individuals being able to do their thing, like a Mordechai and an Esther, that the Jewish people learn and get it, that we have to, and they do. Kimu v'kibla Yehudim, they accept upon themselves. And then they say, okay, we understand the individual development. Each of us has to develop, and we each have our piece in Torah development that we have to do. So now we finish the last idea of Amalek. So Amalek really represents the idea of happenstance. There's chaos. Well, there's chaos, but there's also in terms of the negative, always like pouring, the question and doubt onto everything. And not seeing skepticism, right? That's it. And so, the question will be like, really, does what you do matter? That's really what Amalek will be saying, and that's why Atat Tetzaveh, where you have Aaron playing in here and Moshe, and this aspect of why Moshe lost his spot here, but what Moshe was willing to do in the end to lose his spot here, which begets us a priesthood of an Aaron. Because what the story is all really about is the idea of appreciating the individual's, a contribution, that it really matters. And so that's why at the end, you have the Mizbeach HaKetores. At the end of all this stuff, you had last week in Truma, you have all the vessels being made. Wait, what happened to that last one? You bring it all the way to the back end. After you have all the priesthood, you bring this thing here because it's about smell. It's because it's green. I'm just kidding. But it's about smell. What's interesting about smell is that every individual has their unique smell. Every being has its own unique smell. So that smell, the Ketores, and Mizbeach Ketores. First, my friend said to me, is that today, like I said, there are 11. They play in. You actually have to bring some bad smelling things in to make the whole total thing work. But the Ketores is the idea of bringing all these disparate, different together to make it all one and good. But also the idea of smell itself is this idea of the individuality and the importance of the individual within the whole. And so it comes at the back end with the Kohen. The Kohen does this. What does he do? He brings the incense offering on Yom Kippur when we're not at our best. And that's an elevation. And so what really, I think, like the major, like, you know, again, there's like multiple layers. But here you see this idea of Aaron, Moshe, Aaron, how they played in. The idea of the eternal aspects of Moshe. He's willing to also have aspects of himself that are like Esther that comes out later. The willingness of an individual to give of themselves completely for the whole. But that's what makes the individual, brings out the greatness of that individual as well. And so that Amalek's coming and saying, you don't matter. None of you matter. And the answer is, we say no, the opposite. It's the priesthood. It's these lessons about the celebration of each of us are so unique and different. 600,000 of us, there were different things that God was speaking. Each one heard their own. We need each one of those people to come and contribute their own specific talents. And so here's the last thing. It says that we are Zachor, to remember. So now Zachor means to remember, but it also means like to be aware and to be conscious, awareness. Each person's awareness, consciousness, is unique. And that's what we're doing. A person's conscience is unique. Your awareness is different than his and his, everybody. And that's another idea, so that when we remember, it's also not to just remember, it's to be aware and to be conscious of.
Everyone's memories, everyone's thought process.
It's all, and just not even just thought process, just your being aware. Yeah. Is unique. And so the Zechira also is that matters, but also it itself is an expression of uniqueness. And so when we are unique,
what's the expression
of your conscious awareness, right. So it goes so deep that it's like wild, right? But that is that the act of being unique.
Well, you spoke to that a little while ago, right? You said how Aaron could sit with somebody for 5 minutes and make that person feel that they're special.
And that's...
And so but that's what you're really saying, right? That each one of us unto ourselves is special.
He's also saying that your own awareness is an opportunity for you to reflect upon yourself and where I am and what I can be.
And also, each one of us is... that you that when you're aware, to be conscious... is also to say, we all know that when we're consciously aware, that's something that's completely unique to you.
It means that you matter. It means that you matter and everything you
it's like it's a very deep, and you see when you can take something and twist it around to the different, and it keeps on playing out, it just shows you that how deeply true it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why, so when it comes to, we think that if you want to get rid of something, you should just forget about it. Here we're saying the act of being aware and conscious is the obliteration of Amalek. Hmm. Because then you're highlighting how important our uniqueness is. And that ultimately says that then there's no more Amalek. Amalek is literally wiped out when we're aware. When we're like keyed in, conscious, and doing what we're supposed to be doing.
They can't harm us.
It's the act of destroying. That is the act of destroying.
Being conscious.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, I was just reading something the other day that talked about, you know, you need to try to, not let your emotions dictate your actions. And they were saying, you know, it doesn't mean suppressing your emotions. It means being aware of your emotion and knowing, hey, look, I'm feeling this
right
now. Act on it. Like it was heightening an element of awareness, being able to not bury the thing.
Right, but not to let it take over.
So, react appropriate.
So then, okay.
Not emotional.
So then here's a question, and it's sort of a bit of an aside then. So why on Friday night we say to our sons, may make you like Menashe and Ephraim, not like Aaron and Moses.
Okay.
Why them?
Okay,
why
not? So why?
We bought something on this recently.
Hold on a second. What does that have to do with this? No, I'm just kidding.
That's next hour.
I know, that's another hour talk. But
we're ordering dinner in.
Different concept.
Well, yeah. So you know what's interesting is that I would say like this: that Ephraim and Menashe, different than Aaron and Moses, were first of all, they were outside, they were away from the rest of the family, right? Okay. They're born in exile,
okay,
right? And then they kept their identity, but also, yeah, they might, in a way, there's more development work that needs to be done there, and saying, okay, we want you to be. Want those that are going to have to develop more. It's good. Okay. I mean, to be, yeah,
it
would be.
I mean, I understand the, you know, why them and,
right.
You know.
Why couldn't they have done four? I mean, or five? Why couldn't it have been Menashe, Ephraim?
Right, why not like the girls?
Abraham,
girl,
Isaac, and Jacob. Why couldn't it be the five of them? Why couldn't it
have,
you know?
All right. So,
the highlight.
So, sorry.
The highlight.
So, consciousness.
All right. So, I should have, yeah. Good. So we should be
Yashikah. Yashikah.